Z ballot breakdown.
Ballot breakdown.
Broomhead breaks down who and what are on your ballot. AZ ballot breakdown.
All right, let's dive into this. Poll shows how RFK Jr.'s appeal to anti-vaccine right could hurt Trump. There is nobody that believes that RFK Jr. is going to win the election. No offense to the RFK Jr. fans. He's got no shot at winning this election. But he is definitely has a chance to be a spoiler. If you're a little older, you remember Ross Perot. That was the exact position Ross Perot was in, but it was to make a statement. Republicans were angry. George H.W. Bush had made a promise. It was an emphatic promise. He said, read my lips, no new taxes. Now, there's a lot more of nuance than there is, but taxes went up. And so there were a lot of Republicans that thought you broke your word. There were many Republicans, especially very fiscally conservative Republicans, that were angry about the proposition of taxes increasing. And there's a lot of discussion about what actually happened. I'm just telling you the attitudes of voters. Read my lips, no new taxes. And then taxes went up. So Ross Perot was a businessman and was loved by people and ran as a third party candidate. And at the time, and it's so weird how history treats people. And it's accurate that way. And I like the way it works out. Just anecdotally, George W. Bush was reviled. Nobody liked him. He was angry in this war thing and everything else. And George W. Bush is a good man, and so is George H.W. Bush. By the way, George H.W. Bush, one of the kindest human beings on the planet. Him and his wife were loved by the American people post-presidency. But speaking of W also had made a lot of people, and same thing happened. But history seems to be kind to former presidents when you see the human being they are and you're not caught in the day-to-day battle of the politics. At the time, Bill Clinton was not really... nobody really thought he could win or really thought that he'd be a good president. You can go back and look, and I think it was Time Magazine. It might have been Newsweek, but one of the major publications at the time when he was elected president showed him on the cover of a magazine, very, very small, and asking the question if he was up to the job. He was not popular. There wasn't a lot of confidence in him. He ended up being a very popular Democrat president. And the Clinton family was kind of the Kennedys of that next generation in the Democratic Party. But at that time, he was not very highly thought of. Ross Perot was the third party candidate that jumped in, and they knew that he was going to siphon votes off of George H.W. Bush, that this was definitely an in for Clinton. And that's exactly what happened. He had no shot of winning that election, but he was a spoiler and sent a message. And Bill Clinton was a two-term president that followed. RFK Jr. has that potential, but there isn't as much clarity as to who it hurts. At the very beginning, they thought it's definitely going to hurt Biden. But there are other things, other factors that are going into play. And what some of the poll numbers are showing is that he's taking votes from both sides. So who really knows what it's going to do? And is there going to be issues? If RFK Jr. is an anti-vax, and so is he going to siphon some of the people that are issue voters when it comes to those things? And then, you know, what's interesting is on the Democrat side of things, the pushback is starting to happen. He's polling somewhere around 8-10% somewhere in that area, but no one's really attacked him yet. And that's going to happen from both sides. He's gotten into battles with Trump. He's gotten into battles with Biden. 12 or 13 members of the Kennedy family, his family, have come out and endorsed Joe Biden and spoken out against RFK Jr. So that battle is beginning. So then the question is, all right, if Trump gets into a battle with RFK and they start to go after him, how many of those voters that said, you know what, RFK is going to be my option and my protest vote is going to go to that guy? How many will say, oh, I don't want to vote for that guy and go back to Trump? How many Democrats that say, you know, 12, 13 members of the Kennedy family, his own flesh and blood, have come out, not stayed silent, not stayed out of the way, have come out and endorsed Joe Biden and said this guy shouldn't be president? How many Democrats will say, well, all right, if that's the Kennedy endorsement, whatever power they still have? I don't know the answer to that. That's the difficulty for a third party candidate. what somebody stands for. And, you know, I'm not necessarily an advocate one way or the other. I'm just saying that's what somebody stands for, and viability depends on the two-party system we have in many cases. Republicans are going to vote for Republicans in huge numbers. Democrats are going to vote for Democrats in huge numbers. You hear voters saying, I really don't like when you have 20-something percent of registered voters say, I'm not really happy about Trump or Biden. But those 20%, you're not seeing RFK Jr. polling at 20%. You're not seeing him in the 20s. If you have disenfranchised voters that say, I don't really like either of the two candidates from the major parties, they're both too old and they bring too much baggage, and whatever those reasons are, it's time for something different. You're not seeing RFK Jr. poll in the 20s. The partisan voters are still drawn to their party. I'm not calling it good or bad. It's just that's how it is. So RFK still has the potential to be a spoiler. And to what degree, we don't know. How, and for the national polling at 8% or wherever he is now, let's say he lands at 8%. I don't think it'll be that high. I think it's going to be closer to 5 or 6% by the time he gets the beat down from the other two candidates as they all pummel each other. But let's say he lands at 8%. But where does he, how does he do in swing states? How many states is he going to qualify for the ballot? That's another question, because when you think about it, who cares how he polls in California? Biden is going to win California. Doesn't matter how he polls in Texas. Trump's going to win Texas. He's polling well. Trump is polling well in Arizona. But would there be enough RFK voters? You look at how close that race was between Biden and Trump in 2020. You look at that difference and you think, OK, could RFK make a difference here? Those are going to be the key things when you find out which states he's going to qualify for the ballot. Those, the questions then will be asked about, okay, the viability may not be nationwide, but what impact will he make in the swing states? What is it? It's going to be Arizona. It's going to be Wisconsin. It's going to be Georgia. You know, there's six swing states that are going to decide this whole thing, that the other ones are fairly set in stone. What's going to happen in Ohio? What's going to happen, you know, in these other places? And in the end, this impact may be a protest vote. Can he say to the country? And it's a great question. Can RFK Jr. get enough support monetarily to make a statement to the country that no one seems to be happy with the choices? Voice that displeasure and vote for me. I'm giving you the option you're asking for. Can he get that message to resonate in swing states to send enough of a message? And if he does, which of the two major parties are willing to do it? With what's happening on college campuses and with the Democratic Party and support for the Palestinians, are there enough people out there that will protest vote with RFK? Or, as this story talks about, the anti-vax crowd and sending a message to the former president? It's a fascinating study. In a moment, we're going to talk about the economy. The Fed meets today. What are they going to do with interest rates and how it'll affect the general public? Those are great questions, and we'll try to answer them here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. The Fed is expected to keep rates higher. There's a lot of effects that are happening in the U.S. Going through some of the headlines, U.S. consumer confidence drops to its lowest level in nearly 2 years. One in four Americans fear losing their job this year. What's causing it was part of the questions. McDonald's and other big businesses are saying that low-income consumers are starting to break. These are all major concerns, obviously, for the economy. When you start seeing working class people who classically, if you think about what it's always been like, we understand the balance between healthy food for our kids and convenience, but also it's about budget sometimes. It used to be being able to feed your kids. They love McDonald's. You know, it's not always good for them. It's not good for them every single day. But sometimes it's convenience, sometimes it's budget. You were able to quickly go through the drive-thru, get a Happy Meal, or any other. And I'm not trying to say good or bad or promote one or the other of fast food restaurants, but you know what I'm saying. Drive-thru, grab something quick, something inexpensive. You know, my mom spent her entire life with three boys, teenagers at one time, all of us teenagers at one time. And she was trying to figure out how she was going to feed all of us. You know, we ate like teenage boys and, you know, we were hamburger helper and all that stuff, too. All the things that you do to try to make ends meet. I don't know. And I certainly don't remember it happening with this huge spike in inflation that was going on at that time. As a matter of fact, it was the other way. It was the time when it was happening in our family. It was the time of the turnaround where things were moderating and the economy was getting better. So it was fortunate for us. But for families right now that are trying to balance their budget, they're looking at what's happening now. Food prices are still astronomically high. Fuel prices are still high. Arizona's gotten a waiver on our summer blend for a certain amount of time until the refining issues and production issues are solved. So it should help keep gas prices down, at least from where they could be if we were to see some spike because of delivery or production. But overall, people are very concerned, and inflation is remaining high. You're going to hear arguments, and there are always going to be arguments about it, where it's blamed on industry. And this is where I keep mentioning our conversation with the Farm Bureau, Arizona Farm Bureau. To get the information that we did from them about the costs to the farmers and ranchers, our food producers. And she made an excellent point and said, you know, it's the one industry where they buy everything that they use retail and then they sell it, their products, wholesale. They're paying for feed and hay if you're growing cattle, if you're growing livestock. They're paying retail prices for those items. They pay retail prices for the farmers, for all of the equipment that they buy. They pay retail prices from the equipment manufacturers. If you've ever seen how much farm equipment costs, I guarantee you it's as much as a house sometimes, maybe more. They pay retail for fertilizer. They pay retail for water. They pay retail for the fuel that they use to plant and to harvest and to deliver. And then they sell their product to a wholesaler. They sell it wholesale prices to someone that goes to a distributor in a grocery store that prices it up and then sells it at market. And so they're struggling across the board, and they're trying not to pass any more than's necessary onto the consumer. But that's part of the life that we live right now. And instead of us looking to the government and say, you need to make it easier for businesses to operate, reduce your regulations, we're not seeing any of that. We're going to talk more specifically of how it's affecting home prices at 10:35, but specifically in other parts of it. Americans are worried about losing their jobs because it's costing businesses. So when you look at the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, what you and I are paying in the inflationary existence, where we are seeing prices go up faster, we are seeing prices still going up faster than the economy really can allow for. Then you look at that and you think, well, what about the manufacturers? What about the people? What about McDonald's and Burger King and Jack in the Box and Chick-fil-A and Church's Chicken and all these other joints that we go to for fast food? And they've all been told in California, Starbucks, they're telling them, you've got more than this many restaurants, you got more than this many locations, you are going to have to pay your people a minimum of $20 an hour. And every one of those retail locations, so we cannot sustain that without raising prices. So you're an already strapped family. You're already trying to figure out how you're going to budget for meals, and your prices are going up. That's a direct result of what the California government mandated. Period. End of story. It's going to alter your life. And instead of reducing regulation, instead of getting out of the way, instead of it making less expensive for businesses to exist, they want to make it more expensive. Next year, if this president gets reelected, this president wants the tax cuts that were implemented a few years ago to expire, which means the taxes they pay on the profits they make are going to go up. Big and small business. This is not isolated to billion-dollar corporations that don't pay anything in taxes, and there's no way a corporation should pay less in taxes than a teacher and all the other bumper sticker t-shirt slogans you hear. This is on the businesses you work for, or maybe you have yourself. You look at what they're trying to do to people that are doing side hustles and using apps to get paid. The pay app thing is coming back. There's no doubt about it, that if you use a pay app to collect money, they're going to have to report. The app is going to have to report your transactions at a much lower rate, which means you, an individual trying to keep your head above water, is going to pay a lot more money because you're going to have to pay taxes on that money because it's being reported to the IRS. We were told that nobody that makes under $400,000 a year is ever going to see a tax increase. And we know that that's not true. We know it's not true. What we're going to do in a moment is speak specifically to building homes, bills in the legislature that would allow for smaller homes to be built. But what is adding to the cost of building homes, and could it be reduced? We'll talk about that next.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Last chance. Win tickets to see the Rolling Stones at State Farm Stadium on May 7th. Head to the contest page at KTAR.com. Complete details and your opportunity to win. Talking about the economy, we've been talking about affordable housing. So let's talk about this. And it's the same narrative. I'm not going to lay off this narrative. I think it's what we need to do. The Reaganism. We don't have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government is living too well. No one is saying that. I'm not. Maybe they are. I shouldn't say no one. I'm not hearing it being said by our nation's leaders, by people on my side of the aisle, that the country is ripe to hear our government is too big, is taking too much money out of the American economy, and is overregulating, that is supposed to be in the public interest, but overregulating and making things cost so much more money. There's a bill in the state legislature. Lawmakers aligned with both housing advocates and home builders are close to striking a deal with cities on a proposed design to help address Arizona's housing shortage. The deal would require cities to have long opposed the legislature's efforts to preempt their authority over zoning rules to allow smaller, cheaper homes on lots within a mile of the central business districts or large cities. So this would also allow for 20% of homes and developments to be built on a smaller scale. So this is a good thing. I think being able to tell developers, and this is where I'm not going to go down this road too long again. I keep harping on this. I know that there are people out there that have a significant amount of money that are investors, venture capitalists, people that have done very well in business and are looking for ways, A, to help the next generation of an entrepreneur be successful and make some money themselves and stay involved in the business world. They would invest in an opportunity that they saw there is a need in the market. And if someone were to go to someone like that and say, here's the deal. We know we have these entry level people that are being priced out of houses that are renting right now, but would buy stable incomes, job security, and they have the means to pay for these smaller houses that are entry level. And then we also know that there are going to be older people that they're now empty nesters or unfortunately widowed, and they're looking to downsize, but they don't want to live in a townhouse. They don't want to live in a condo. They'd like to have a home, but they don't need this huge space, and they're on fixed incomes. There's a market for them. The investors will be out there. There's no doubt. You've got to get the cities to agree. But we know that the administration, and I'm going to say, even if you say they're doing it for the right reasons, this administration has not backed off any of their green energy ideas. They're changing everything about the appliances in your home. I don't care if it's toaster ovens, but it's going to be dishwashers and washing machines and dryers and refrigerators and water heaters and air conditioning units with outrageous efficiency standards that is going to affect you. So every one of you out there that has a home, now my home that I'm in right now, I've got an older air conditioner, and I know within the next few years, I need to replace that AC. If I don't replace the AC, what's going to end up happening is I'm going to be forced to, because it's going to break, and it's probably going to break in the middle of August, and it's going to be a nightmare. So I better plan on doing something ahead of time. So energy efficiency matters. I would want a system that's going to cool my home for as least amount of money as possible. But imagine the efficiency standards that are going to be put in place where it's going to be outrageously expensive for you to replace an appliance. Now imagine this. You're someone that's complaining about the expense of building a home or buying a home. And now builders are being forced, and on a much bigger scale. Let's say you're going to build 30 homes. That's 30 refrigerators. That's 30 dishwashers. That's 30 ovens, 30 washers, 30 dryers, 30 water heaters. And in every one of them, every one of those homes, if those costs go up, the cost to build goes up, the cost to you, the consumer, goes up. That's the way the world works. So when you start adjusting all of these standards, it does have an expense. And we can have the conversation where you say, but it needs to be done. Climate change, and we have to do these things, and the electrical grid, and the people that are moving here, and we want dishwashers and washing machines that are more efficient with water because of the water things we have in Arizona. We may disagree on the necessity of it happening, but we both have to agree that it's going to increase the cost. When you increase the cost to the manufacturer, you increase the cost to the consumer. I don't care if it's raising the minimum wage in fast food restaurants, or it's costing more to buy the appliances for the homes that you're building. It is going to cost you more money. And this is these are the things, the policy changes that need to happen. It's interesting to me that the governor vetoed a bill that would have allowed for smaller homes to be built on some of these pieces of property. It would allow for smaller lot sizes and smaller homes. Not wanting to take the power away from the city to plan and develop the neighborhoods in each individual city. And I'll be honest, I can understand a city fighting tooth and nail saying, I don't care what you think is good for our city. You can't take away our right to be autonomous. I completely get it. But there hasn't really been a movement that we've seen publicly where the cities are being asked by the citizens, what are you going to do about it? As a matter of fact, you've got places like Fountain Hills and others that are fighting apartment complexes, and we don't want them here. I had the mayor of Mesa on. I know Mayor Giles. It's not a slap at Mayor Giles, but Mayor Giles, you know, wants the ability. But I don't think that they have any interest in smaller lots. I don't think they have any interest in a smaller home on a smaller lot. I think they think there's a need for it. I think that we'll let them do it in Phoenix. Go do it in Queen Creek. Go do it in Chandler. Go do it somewhere else, but just don't do it here. And at some point, the market has got to be strong enough and the people have to be vocal enough that it gets done, because you can build a quality product on a smaller scale. You're not going to be building slums. You're not going to be building those kinds of, you're going to be building nice working class neighborhoods. As a matter of fact, some of the most expensive houses right now in the valley are in neighborhoods that were built in the 1950s as working class neighborhoods. Its location is part of it, but it's also the construction quality that's there. You know, the Arcadia area, and where I have a house, it's called Arcadia Light. My neighbors are amazing, amazing people. It is a neighborhood like you would dream about. These are working class homes, and they were built for working class people. And this house was built in 1955, the one that I have. 1955, the neighbors grew up in there. The people across the street from me lived in that home. They built that home in the 50s. Husband just passed away. The wife, the widow, still lives in the home. It is a great neighborhood. It's what everybody would want. These are good, hardworking people. They keep their yards nice. They're proud of where they live. It has absolutely nothing to do with the fact the house I have has got a carport, doesn't have a garage on it. So the idea that you're going to have a working class neighborhood and somehow working class is now going to drive down property values is a slap in the face to working class people. It's a false narrative, and somebody needs to push the cities. I don't want to say force, but push the cities to get past the nonsensical idea. We're going to talk about immigration in a moment. There are a couple of different things to talk about. One of them has to do with the program to fly migrants from foreign countries into the U.S. and where this administration is choosing to fly them. All that's coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right. Long live the Jay Giles Band. Thanks for being here. The immigration issue, I talked about it a couple of different times today on a couple of different issues. Maybe bring them together a little bit. Let's talk about the politics of the immigration fight right now, because the American people for 3 months in a row have said this is a number one issue. It's the longest stretch in 24 years. The immigration issue, and I say immigration, but it's truly the border security issue. That's where the problem lies. The American people are suffering under bad policy. There are, and here's the proof of that. The previous administration, whether you liked it or you hated it, had policies that were in place that had the border a lot more under control. That doesn't mean you had to like the policies. I'm just saying the policies were in place. This president, with I think 89, but it was over 80 executive order and reversals, changed the policies immediately at the beginning of his presidency, and we have seen an increase in millions of people crossing our border. Both of those presidents changed policy. That doesn't mean you had to like Trump's policies. It doesn't mean you have to like or dislike Biden's policies, but you have to acknowledge that there's been no change in laws. There's been change in policy. So there are existing things that could be done that could change what's happening at the border. It's a willingness of a president to do it. That's part of it. But the other part of this is the political division. It is somehow we always break this down to Republican versus Democrat, especially in an election year. So when going back a few years, when Republican governors, namely starting with Governor Abbott in Texas, and Governor Ducey of Arizona, our previous governor, and Governor DeSantis in Florida, demonized, vilified. How dare you ship migrants all over the country, using them as political pawns by sending them to New York City, which is where they wanted to go, by the way, or Washington, D.C., or Chicago, Illinois, or wherever it was. How dare you make this political statement? How dare Governor DeSantis fly a group of people into Martha's Vineyard? How dare you? It's all politics. And look at you. What a horrible human being. There is a program that's been going on in this administration, the Biden administration. They are not flying people from border towns secretly across the country and dropping them off. They are flying them. These are migrants headed toward the U.S., and we are flying them. You and I, tax dollars, we are flying them from countries outside of the U.S. into U.S. cities. The statistic is fairly amazing. Between January through August of 2023, roughly 200,000 migrants flew into the U.S. via this program. Of those, 80% or over 161,000 of them arrived in the state of Florida. They were flown into Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, and Tampa Bay. Now, interestingly enough, where I grew up in Florida, I was in Southwest Florida on the Gulf of Mexico, about equal distance, give or take some miles, but fairly close, equal distance south of Tampa, west of Fort Lauderdale, Miami. So I was right. We were right in the triangle. My family, my friends. So here you have the administration flying people that are coming to America. They're not even crossing the border. They're flying them from foreign countries and then dropping them off in cities in Florida. And yet Ron DeSantis was the politician that was doing these things for political reasons. There's a reason why the American people see this as a crisis. American people are good people. If we get this border security issue under control, if we secure the border, I mean really secure the border, so that we, as the American people, can control the flow of traffic, we will always, as Americans, embrace immigrants that come here the right way. I met a guy yesterday from India and his wife. Wife is a listener to the show. And really a nice couple. Successful. He's an investor, graduated from U of A, just a brilliant guy. Immigrant 20 years ago from India. And came here the right way. Did it legally. And, you know, without getting into specifics about conversation, you're talking to people that are frustrated. They're American citizens. They've done it the right way. They've gotten their education. They become successful business people. They have assimilated to become Americans. And we're watching, and I'm not putting words in his mouth. These are my words, not his. But we're watching people cross the border and then make demands and not having any respect for the American laws or the American people. One of the studies is showing that people, Americans, have a bad feeling about the current generation of immigrants. They don't respect them because they don't feel like they're being respected. That does not bode well for America long term. And it's something that needs to change. At 11:05, we are going to talk about what happened at Columbia University. We're going to let you hear from a protester that's making demands of humanitarian aid for protesters. It is absolutely laughable, and we all need a laugh. So we're going to laugh together next.